testing. Louder a bit. A bit. Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. You all can hear at the back? Ah, okay, good. Thank you so much for the kind introduction. Okay, very good morning to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today's topic is a very, very relevant and very important topic. The title of the talk is The Importance of Buddhist Devotional Practices. Thank you so much, Roger. Thank you. You see, this topic is very relevant to all Buddhist cultivator, practitioner, and even you all. What is the meaning of Buddhist devotional practices? Means, as a Buddhist, we have some form of devotional practices that the Buddha actually recommended to us. So what you all did just now, before we start the talk, was actually one of the very good Buddhist devotional practices of puja that the Buddha recommended. And the meaning behind is very deep, very, very important. If you can understand, then it has a lot of power within to enable you to actually develop the understanding of his teaching. Then you can realize the beautiful Dhamma that he has shared with the world. The reason being, the Buddha knew this particular teaching, he called it the Buddha Dharma, which can actually bring about great transformation to each and every one of us, especially living beings, not only human beings. You see, the Buddha knew, after he became enlightened, this world of ours, this universe of ours, is not a perfect world. It has its, what they call, associated life problems. There is a lot of realities in life and existence that can bring about a lot of misery, suffering, sorrow and lamentation, unhappiness. So all this is part and parcel of what the Buddha's message is, because he came to this world, the planet of ours, out of love and compassion for all beings, not only human beings. He has this great compassion to share this great message, the timeless message of the Buddha Dharma, so that when we have this message and we can cultivate according to what he has realized, then hopefully if we also realize this beautiful Buddha Dharma and became enlightened like him, then according to the Buddha, there will be no more suffering, no more problem for the living beings. Then you can have a situation where life can become very meaningful, very beautiful. You will be able to live a life of nobility. He said, the enlightened one during the Buddha's time are called noble ones. Means you are very noble in every aspect of you. Your understanding of life, you have the wisdom, you are very noble in that. Then the way you talk, communicate, the way you act, and the way you arise your thought, the way you live your life, there is a lot of understanding behind. You are so virtuous, so wise. That's why you have all the right thought, right speech, right action, and right way to live your life. Then you are full of awareness, mindfulness, understanding. Your mind is very calm, very peaceful. There will be no more problem for such a being, he said. There is no more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety, no more unhappiness, no matter what happened to you and the world. So this is a very unique message. So for us, so-called Buddhists or disciples of the Buddha, to be worthy of him, we should at least heed his advice and cultivate his teaching. And that was the reason why the Buddha knew it's not easy to cultivate this teaching of his. That's why he come out with this very beautiful Buddha Puja. Yeah. What you all recite just now is one of the very good Buddhist devotional practices, and they call it the Puja. That's why you have this various type of Buddha Puja that the Buddha recommended. And through understanding the deep meaning within this Buddhist devotional practice, you can actually come to understand his teaching very clearly and very easily. You don't have to cultivate like most people who are not clear about what the truth is. And they actually have to search very long. But you follow this Buddhist devotional practice that he has actually come out with, your cultivation becomes very, very simple, very easy, very straightforward, and you will never miss the, what they call final aim, to become liberated, to become enlightened. Mm. Okay, I will have to use the whiteboard. Eh? I have to write something there so that it's clearer to you all. The title is Importance of Buddhist Devotional Practices. These are all the various Buddha Puja that you all have actually done. And if you were to follow this, he will enable you to develop what he calls the five spiritual faculties. And this is the most important. Without these five spiritual faculties, it's very difficult for the living beings to actually understand his teaching. I think this five spiritual faculty, most of you must have heard before, huh? The first one is sadda, or confidence. Yeah, confidence. Where's the duster? Oh, thank you. In the Buddha and his teaching. Then followed by what he called virya, sati, or mindfulness. Then samadhi. Or collectedness of mind. Then the last one is wisdom, panya or wisdom. Okay. How many of you are not familiar with the five spiritual faculties? You all heard of it before? Ah, good. If you heard of it before, then it will be easier for me to explain. You see, the Buddha said, the human being, there are certain mental faculty and spiritual faculty that you have. And when you have them, it's very easy for you to develop the understanding of his teaching, for you to receive his teaching. Mm. The first being the confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. Some people use the word faith, but if you use faith, you have to be a bit careful. Because faith is what they call very strong confidence or belief. But here, the meaning of sadda is not blind faith. It is the faith or confidence that comes with the understanding of who the Buddha is. how special, how wise he is. Because he is the fully enlightened one, perfect in enlightenment, perfect in virtue and wisdom. He is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born during his time. And such a being is very rare to come by. Then his teaching is so wonderful. His teaching can bring about enlightenment, great transformation to us, each and every one of us, from a deluded, problematic human being who has a lot of suffering and problems. This teaching, when you cultivate and develop the understanding, and if you can become like him, enlightened, it can transform you completely, totally. Your personality, your character, the way you understand life, your wisdom, everything completely transformed. And your life can become so meaningful and so beautiful. From that moment onward, you will have no more problem with life, no more suffering, no more misery, no more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety, and no more sorrow and lamentation, too, no matter what happened to the world, to your loved ones, to your own physical health or body, or whatever things that happen to your career, your business, your so-called wealth, poverty, business, and everything. This is the very, very unique teaching. So the moment you come to understand who he is and what his teaching is, I can tell you, you will have a lot of great respect and gratitude towards him. So coming back to the Buddhist devotional practice, so if you can recollect this morning, what did you all do? What did you all do? How did you all start? You pay reverence to the Triple Gem, isn't it? Then after that, you did a lot of devotional things, isn't it? You offer the four very basic but important offerings. What are they? Light, flower, then water, and incense. And the meaning also very deep and very clear. If you have really followed with understanding, the reason why we offer light to the Buddha is to constantly remind us through his teaching that light can dispel darkness. His teaching can provide or give rise to wisdom that can help you dispel ignorance. Then the beautiful flowers that you brought along to make offerings to the Buddha, to the Triple Gem, they are indeed so beautiful at the condition when you buy them. And because of that, you sincerely make your offering. But at the same time, you reflect. You reflect on the ephemeral or impermanent nature of flower. Because flower is very cute. It decays very fast. Especially those who are helping the temple to clear all this flower. You will see the decaying process happening very fast. How the flower at its prime, at its beauty, can really, really decay. Then it actually finally like die off. So this is the nature's law, universal characteristic of all phenomena, the Buddha said. Our body behaves the same. Everything we own behaves the same. They are all condition arising, causal phenomena. When there is condition for them to arise, they arise. Then when there is condition for them to sustain itself, it will be there. Then when condition cease to be, it will end, it will cease. Sometimes we call it dead, die. So this reflection is very powerful, because when we see the impermanence in all things, we will not be deluded by it. We will not grasp and hold on to it, because it is the nature to go that way. like our body, it go the way of nature, subject to what they call old age, sickness and death. Not only our body, everybody's body. All of living things, all of phenomena, they exhibit the same reality, the same universal characteristic. So once we can develop this deep penetrative insight into phenomena through the meditative process that follow after the Buddha's puja or the Buddhist devotional practice, that wisdom can arise, can actually awaken and allow you to have that understanding of this beautiful teaching. The moment you understand impermanent or anicca, you will understand why you cannot hold, you cannot grasp, you cannot cling. Because the moment you do that, you want things your way, which is not Nietzsche's way. Suffering will follow, the Buddha said, when you cannot get what you want. Just like this body. We want it to be forever young. Don't get old, don't get sick and die. Because this one goes the way of nature. It's not you. You got no control. That's why it will lead you to understand if you cling, you hold, you will suffer. And because it's impermanent, the Buddha said, it is not you, anatta. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can grasp onto, hold on to and say, this is me, this is I, this can be mine. Impossible. So this beautiful reflection can bring about understanding and the faith become very strong. The saddha, or what they call the confidence in the Buddha and his teaching, will become very strong. Then after that, you offer what they call water, clear water and incense. Your mind, he said, if you cultivate them, it can be like this crystal clear water, beautiful, clarity, enlightenment. When there is no clarity, when there is no spiritual faculty within your mind, the mind is clouded. Clouded with a lot of defilement. Clouded with a lot of mental hindrance, the Buddha called it. You heard of the opposite five, eh? The five mental hindrance that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. Or in another word, it robs your mind from becoming peaceful. Yeah? Your lack of peace, lack of calmness is because of this hindrance of mind that constantly arises in you. And that topic, the five hindrance and the five mental faculty, I have already spoken in my last talk, I think last month or what. If you have the opportunity, I think they have it in the website. You can go through it. That one, I went into it quite detail. Actually, to tell you the truth, today's talk, earlier on, my topic is supposed to be another one. It's supposed to be the importance of training the mind in heedfulness to understand the meditation as taught by the Buddha. But then when I saw the, what they call your president's message on the notice, I realized this is a better topic because this is more suitable for you. The one I chose is more for meditators. Yeah. So this one is in fact very, very much better. So I would like to thank Jim for it. Then this morning when I came, I saw also on your slide there, they have changed its title. So I only come to know yesterday. That's why I find it so interesting. I said, good, not bad. So I use the title, Importance of Buddhist Devotional Practices. Then after that, after this offering, we start. We pay respect. Buddha pujemi, you remember? Dhamma pujemi, Sangha pujemi. You go for, you pay respect to the Triple Gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. And you do it with a lot of understanding. When your faith is very strong, when your confidence is very strong, then you pay respect mindfully with a lot of sincerity. The field of merits is immeasurable. like the chanting that you chant, the salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. The Sangha, the last part. The four pairs of enlightened beings, they are worthy of four things. Offering, hospitality, gift, and reverential salutation. So the reverential salutation is it. If you do it with understanding, with confidence, with mindfulness, sincerity, and understanding, the field of merit is immeasurable. That's why from there, your what they call virtue starts to develop. Your affinity with the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, you start to develop. Because after that, you chant the salutation to the Buddha. You know what you chant? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. You know the meaning or not? How many of you don't know the meaning? Or the other way around? How many of you know the meaning? Good. At least quite a number. You see, namo means homage to thee. The blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. That's why you pay homage to the Buddha, because you recognize his great virtue. He is the blessed one, blessed with wisdom and virtue, perfect in both of these, because he is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened, perfect in enlightenment. Then he is the Arahan, the worthy one, worthy of respect, worthy of offering and all those things. Then he is the fully enlightened one. That's why these three of the nine great virtues, they are the most important virtue that the Buddha carry with him. Then after that, you chant refuge. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami. Do you know what this is? Why do you take refuge? Why do you go to the Buddha for refuge? Why do you go to the Dhamma for refuge? Why do you go to the Sangha for refuge? What is a refuge? A safe sanctuary there. So the Buddha in the Dhammapada verse, if I'm not wrong, 190, 91, and 92, he explained very clearly, in this universe, there is no refuge safe, is it? Not even in the cave or in the mountains or whatever that you seclude yourself. There is no refuge safe. It's only in the triple gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. And the reason why the Buddha said it is because they are the one that has the teaching. The Buddha, being the fully enlightened one, he surely has the teaching. Otherwise, he cannot be enlightened. Then he is like a, what they call, great inspiration for us all. The Buddha said he was like us, just an ordinary living being, human being. But through his sincerity, his determination, his perseverance, he was able to cultivate and perfect himself until he became the fully enlightened. And this is possible. That's why through his ability to do it, he came to realize this great enlightenment. He was able to come back to share with us this beautiful message. And what is the message of the Buddha? His message is none other than love, compassion, and wisdom, these three. So what is love? Actually, love, compassion, and wisdom can be translated to the Buddha's advice. The Buddha's advice is Dhammapada verse 183, which you all have it outside your gate there, behind your gate. The famous Dhammapada saying, verse 183. Sabba papasa akaranang kusalesa upasampadan sacitta pariyottapadang etang buddhanasasana. So this is the famous advice of all Buddhas. The Buddha said, sabbe is all, papasa is evil. All evil you have to avoid. Then kusalesa upasampadan. Kusalesa, kusala, wholesomeness, goodness, kindness, all the non-evil, whatever that is wholesome, if you have condition, you should cultivate. Then the last one is purify your mind, to develop the wisdom so that you can become enlightened. The reason why he said this is because if you look at his message of love, compassion, and wisdom, it's actually the same. It ties back to the advice. To have love means what? Metta means what? The absence of negativity. Understand that? Because that is a universal love. There is no negativity behind. That type of love doesn't have what they call anger, hatred, and jealousy. So when there is love, there is absence of negativity. It's only love. That's why you have to avoid all evil. Yeah. Then compassion is what? Compassion is all of your kindness and goodness to help people. Those are compassion. That's why whatever kindness, goodness, and wholesomeness, you must do. Then the last one is wisdom. That's why he said you must train your mind, cultivate this beautiful mind, so that you can have this so-called enlightenment, born of the wisdom from the Buddha Dharma, that can enable you to understand clearly what life is, clearly what are the laws that governs all of life and existence. That's how you have your right view. When you understand this nature's law that governs all of life and existence, it's like you understand the secret of life. You know how to live. You know how to free yourself from all the entanglement and suffering in life. So that's why this teaching is very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. Yeah. So the moment you have this understanding, you become so different. Your faith and confidence in the Buddha becomes so strong. And this will drive the second spiritual faculty. That's why as you develop your devotional practices and cultivation, you will have this, what they call, virya. Virya is the second spiritual faculty. This is a Pali word. The meaning is spiritual zeal or spiritual tenacity to walk the path of the Buddha Dharma. Means to walk the path of Dhamma. That's why this is a very important energy, spiritual energy within our heart. This is the one that can drive you to develop these devotional practices, the Buddhist devotional practices, and cultivate the meditation and walk the path of Dhamma to train your mind to develop all the other subsequent spiritual faculty. So once Sadda and Virya is there, the confidence in the Buddha and his teaching and this spiritual zeal come to be, it will drive you to meditate. Then during the puja, the devotional practice, if you know how to pay respect to the Buddha with a lot of gratitude and confidence, Sadda, and the Virya inside, you can do it mindfully. Mindfulness means the body and mind move as one without thought. When you are silent without thought, you are aware, you are mindful. So this quality, the spiritual faculty of mindfulness, can come about when your faith is very strong. When your faith is very strong, your mind is very composed, very calm, very serene. That's why when you pay respect, that mindfulness can come about. It's like you got no thought, but there is a lot of calmness, a lot of joy, a lot of confidence in you. And this is the one that actually brings forth the cultivation of sati. That's why do not underestimate the power of reverential salutation or bowing. It can bring forth a lot of mindfulness. That everything you do during the puja, even you radiate metta, loving kindness, like just now, you wish all beings free from danger, free from mental suffering, free from physical suffering. May they always be well and happy. The well-being and happiness of all beings. And this is the generosity that you have from your heart, the loving kindness that you radiate to fellow beings, you radiate to yourself. And these are all the very great virtue. And also, it constitutes what the Buddha called the 10 meritorious action. when you do your Buddha Puja, you cultivate all these 10 meritorious actions. And these meritorious actions are what your karma will inherit. Whatever goodness that you have done, whatever good merits that you have done, these are like your inheritance. Just like in our society, it's like the money you have accumulated, the wealth you have accumulated, that you can use it for the happiness of yourself, your loved one and all. Except in the spiritual sense, these are what they call meritorious action that brings about meritorious result. The fruition of it, when it comes back, if you understand how to use it, you can make the appropriate aspiration to channel what your merits you want it to be directed at. And it can be applied in many, many very useful way if you have the understanding of his teaching. Then the other part that you need to understand is you renew your 5 precepts, you remember? You know why you renew your 5 precepts? Why do you undertake the training rule, the first precept, to abstain from killing or causing harm to fellow living beings? Do you know why you have to keep your precept? It's not because the Buddha is trying to make life difficult for you. A lot of people find the precept not so easy to keep, especially the 4th one on lying, telling lies. Then some, they got this habit of drinking. The 5th precept of non-partake, the intoxicant like alcohol and other things. But whatever it is out of love and compassion for you. The Buddha advised you to abstain. That's why he said, we undertake the training rule to abstain from all these 5 negativity. The precepts are to protect you. They constitute evil. If you were to reflect back each and every of these precepts, under what circumstances will you violate the precept? Who are the people who violate this precept? They are people with a lot of evil. The 3 evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed is your selfishness, your craving, your lust, your desire, your covetousness, your deceitfulness. Hatred is all your anger, your jealousy, your envy, your negative state of mind. Delusion is your lack of wisdom, not understanding the nature's law that governs all of life and existence, not understanding truth. So we take, for example, the first precept. What type of person will kill? What type of person will kill and harm? What type of person? Normally is very angry and violent person in there. That one is quite easy to understand. But sometimes selfish people, they also harm and kill, understand that? Especially in business and politics. They do a lot of these things. So you see, it's always angry and selfish people, greedy people. And because they have this delusion, that's why they can be greedy and selfish. Otherwise, they won't kill. They won't harm, they won't cheat, they won't deceive. Because there is this nature's law that governs all of life and existence. The Buddha called it the law of karma. Through understanding this law, the law of karma, you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. You reap what you sow. And the Buddha make it very clear, each and every one of us as living beings, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So we cannot blame anybody for our life situation. So knowing this, we need to keep this precept, because if you don't keep your precept, means what? You commit evil. You go against the advice of the Buddha. The moment you do that, your mind actually creates a lot of negative karma. Then you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and you are what you are every moment, every instant because of it. So that's why human beings who suffer a lot, they still don't understand. All of this suffering comes from their past deed, their past negative karma. which they inherit this life. For those who are very, like, very lucky, very fortunate, everything go their way, it's not because they are lucky, it's because they have cultivated before. They have this understanding, this wisdom, this virtue. That's why when they come, they have everything laid down for them. So the precept is to protect you from committing evil. So like we said, to be worthy of the Buddha, to be his true disciple, we must at least heed his advice, follow his advice. So the best way to start is to actually follow the advice of the Buddha, to cultivate all these devotional practices, the Buddhist devotional practices, all the Buddha puja that you have been doing. That's why throughout the day, not only once a week when you come to the temple, you do this puja or this Buddhist devotional practice. You should have a religious routine every day. Early morning when you wake up, try to spend some time, at least 15 to 20 minutes, or if you can, half an hour, to do this puja and meditate for a while, so that you start your day with a clear mind, with a good mind, with all the merits and all the spiritual faculty intact. Then before you sleep, you do the same. You will have very good sleep, especially if you radiate metta, and your life will be a lot better. Because the moment you actually do all this, the 10 meritorious actions are all there. Yeah. Then the Buddha also taught us how to make use of this 10 meritorious action to help us progress along the path of Dhamma. That's why you all chant after normally Buddhist session or even our Dhamma talk. We transfer merit, delegate merit, share merit, then we make aspiration. You remember? You chant, Ipmina punyang kamena Mami bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. This is a very important advice from the Buddha through all this puja. This is what they call the closing puja. The Buddha said, Ipmina punyang kamena. Punyang is your merit. By the power of this merit that you have cultivated or developed, may it arise the causes and conditions for you to avoid all the foolish ones, but only meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized in the here and the now or soon as possible. So when you make this type of aspiration, you channel all your meritorious action to this, then nature's law will actually pave the way for you to have the causes and conditions to avoid the foolish or the heedless people. And you can have the condition to meet up with the wise and enlightened ones so that they can actually guide you along, pave the way for you to cultivate, to become enlightened. And this is the reason why I said this Buddhist devotional practice, if you understand and if you really do it with a lot of sincerity, perseverance, and you do it well, it can bring about the enlightenment. And the path is very straight, very direct, nothing complicated. Otherwise, without this aspiration and devotional practice to build up your base, if you just go and just meditate. A lot of people thought they only need to meditate. But the whole of the cultivation, the Buddha make it very clear. He said there are three things you have to do to bring forth the meditation. The Buddha always said dana, sila, and bhavana. You heard of this? Dana is what? Generosity. Yeah? Your goodness, your kindness, your generous heart. Your generosity that you actually cultivate through your kind thoughts, through your good action, and through your kind and gentle and pleasant good speeches. These are the dana part. Then it brings forth a lot of condition for you to make the aspiration. Then if you keep your sila, you avoid all evil, all this negative karma will not come and obstruct you when you want to cultivate. So when you have your sila or precept in order, your mind is more peaceful because the hindrance of mind, the number fourth one, restlessness. If you break your precept, you have a lot of restlessness of mind. Because a person who violates the precept has a lot of karmic negativity. They are constantly living under fear, worry, anxiety because they fear people come to know. The law comes up with them. So this fear, worry, anxiety will make them very restless and their mind is not peaceful. That's why they cannot meditate. And this hindrance of mind hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. So that's why if you have dana sila, your meditation can progress faster. Bhavana is the mental training, the mental discipline, the cultivation of the teaching. And that part is actually where all the hard work is. Not so easy. But for those who have the faith, the confidence, and the perseverance, and the spiritual faculty, it can be relatively quite easy. It's only difficult for those who are not serious about life, who are not serious about developing the spiritual faculty that the Buddha taught. So as far as the spiritual faculty is concerned, I only cover three. I will explain the other two. The first two is now very clear to you. Saddha or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching through understanding how special the Buddha is and how wonderful his teaching is, because his teaching can make you enlightened. Then this one, what they call virya, is your spiritual zeal, Z-E-A-L, or tenacity to walk the path of Dhamma. Then sati is mindfulness, or the silent mind without thought. So this is the most important quality. When you have this, your mind can cultivate heedfulness. The Buddha called this the enlightenment factor, the first of the seven enlightenment factors. Without sati, without mindfulness, your meditation cannot start and you cannot progress, because this is the first factor of enlightenment that you need to train your mind to have this quality of silent mind to investigate the Dhamma. Dhamma vichaya, which is the second enlightenment factor. So without sati, there is no investigation of Dhamma. Without sati, there is no possibility of cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path and the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. Without sati, there is no possibility of becoming heedful. Heedfulness is very important. The Buddha, under Dhammapada verse 21, he make it very clear. He said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So to the Buddha, it's very clear. If you talk about spiritual life, without heedfulness, without sati, you are as if dead. Means the spiritual life is close to you. Spiritual life. Without sati, without heedfulness, you are as if dead. So this part is very, very crucial, very important. Then also, before the Buddha passed away, he has this message for the monk. How many of you can recall what it is? What did the Buddha say? Apamadena sampadeta. You heard of this? Maybe some of you must have. He said, strive on with heedfulness, nothing else. Do not be heedless. That is the message to all the monks. So if you know the importance of this, you will make sure you cultivate this. Because without this, there is no spiritual life. Without this, there is no mental clarity. You cannot see things as they are. And when you cannot see things as they are, you cannot develop samadhi, the true samadhi, not the one with concentration. This samadhi is what the Buddha called collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. When your sati become very stable, when your understanding become quite stable, the moment of sense experience, every time you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile feel, or think of something, your mind is unwavering, collected, silent. It still has the ability to see things clearly. When you have this ability to see things as they are, that's why when you develop sati and samadhi, you will have the wisdom to understand what is going on in your life, what is happening to you, how your mind works and functions, how you function as a human being, how through your own delusion you are conditioned into the evil roots that cause you to grasp and cling and trigger off your suffering in life, how you become sad, how you become emotional, how you become fearful. All this, you start to see them. That's how you develop the wisdom, the understanding to overcome them. The Four Noble Truths all can be understood clearly. You will know what suffering is. You will know the cause behind its arising, how you become what you are. Then you will understand when you have the wisdom to reverse all this, your mind becomes very peaceful, very calm. Means suffering need not be. Cessation of suffering is possible. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. Then if you understand the teaching, you will know the path that leads to the cessation of suffering, which is the Fourth Noble Truth, is what the Buddha called the Noble Eightfold Path. And the Noble Eightfold Path got these two path factor behind, the last two, 7 and 8 path factor. That's why these two, when it comes into action, the wisdom keep on arising. And these are very powerful factors of enlightenment too. That's why when you understand the importance of Buddhist devotional practice, how it can lead you to the whole understanding of his teaching, once the spiritual faculty, Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya is there, you can understand his teaching very easily, very quickly. And not only that, the Buddha said, if you continue to cultivate, if you continue to stabilize this 5 spiritual faculty, it will come to a stability that they call powers. It becomes powers. In Pali, they call it balas. The same 5, but all these 5 become unshakable. Your faith and confidence in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, unshakable. There is no more doubt. The confidence is always there, no matter what happens. Then the virya is constantly so strong. The sati become like mahasati, great mindfulness, very stable. Every moment throughout the day is with you. Samadhi is very natural because of the wisdom. It doesn't suffer anymore. The mind doesn't waver anymore. It's always collected. Then the wisdom also becomes so stable, so powerful. That's why it can bring forth the equanimity, upeka mind, that is not distracted by anything in life. So this is a summary of what you need to know. And this has a lot to do with the Buddha Puja or the Buddhist devotional practice that you every day, every Sunday do. But you can bring this back to your home so that it is not once a week type of affair, so that every day when you are at home, you can at least have a religious routine to do it twice a day. Then in between, if you have the free time, you should try to develop this devotional practice or meditation or the daily mindfulness to train your sati, your mindfulness, your heedfulness in daily life. And this is something that is so important to the human being. If you see the significance of it, you see the importance of it, if you are serious about life, you should do it. Otherwise, it's a waste. Because like the Buddha said, to be born as a human being is very rare. And to be born during the time when the Buddha's teaching is still around, the Buddha Sasana is still around, is even more rare. and to be born as a human being, having this condition to be a Buddhist, to encounter the Buddha Dharma, is even more rare. And given the opportunity, if you miss this window, it can be a very, very long interval between the next opportunity for this. Yeah. So, like the advice of the Buddha, do strive on with heedfulness. Do not be heedless. And this is a very important message. Do not take it lightly. Yeah. So, I will end this talk maybe after I summarize the 10 meritorious actions. Yeah. Just now I mentioned, if you do your Buddha Puja, you almost perform all of your 10 meritorious actions. Meritorious actions are actions that bring about a lot of merits, a lot of goodness, a lot of good karmic inheritance. And these are the great spiritual wealth that you can bring along life after life. And this is what you must do. That's why if you have this understanding, this sincerity, this what they call faith or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching, if you seriously cultivate this Buddhist devotional practice, you will perform almost all of these 10 meritorious actions. The first three the Buddha called Dana, Sila, and Bhavana. You know, Dana is your generosity. You radiate metta. You make donation and offering materialistic through your action. Then you have what they call kind, gentle, and good speeches that bring about harmony, bring about goodness, bring about what they call good condition to help people so that there is no more misunderstanding, conflict, and all those things. Then you have this what they call the so-called goodness in you. So this Dana Parami, when you are here doing the Buddhist devotional practices while in the temple, you perform them a lot. Then the second one is you renew your precept. Keeping your precept sila is a great meritorious action. You abstain from causing negativity or harm to fellow beings. And that itself protects you because this is the karma you will inherit. People will not harm you. People will not cause all this evil negativity to you because you avoid all this. So, sila is another great meritorious action. Bhavana, of course, is meditation. Yeah? When you develop the faith, the spiritual faculty, the sadha, the virya, and the mindfulness, it's a form of meditation. Because meditation is to develop this spiritual faculty to overcome your hindrance of mind. Then after that, you pay respect to the Buddha, reverential salutation to the Triple Gem. It's another meritorious action. And this one, the merit is very high. Then the fifth one is you listen to the Dhamma. Then you straighten your view, which is another meritorious action. Then after the Dhamma talk or whatever Buddhist activity, we have the post puja or the closing puja. So during this closing puja, we transfer merits to departed one. We share merits with the devas. We dedicate merits. These are all meritorious actions. Then when you are at the temple doing all these devotional practices and activity, just like the sister and the brother and your president, the exco committee, they actually offer their service to your SJBA association. And this type of services is also one of the meritorious actions. You offer your time, your sincerity to help people, to bring about goodness, to bring about all the, what they call, merits that are possible. So all these constitute the 10 meritorious actions. Of course, the last one is the gift of truth. You may think you are not giving. No, you are giving. When you donate to Dhamma books, printing of Dhamma books, then when you actually tell your friends that there are certain Dhamma sharing that can benefit them, It is also partake in this meritorious action of the gift of truth. Then when you can share your understanding with them later on, when you yourself have the understanding of what the teaching is, you can also play that role, the gift of truth. So all this constitute the 10 meritorious actions. And it is very wholesome, very what they call meritorious. So if you can do and cultivate all this, even within this so-called 1 or 2 hours, it is full of what they call virtuous, meritorious action. And it can bring about a lot of goodness, not only to you, not only to your karmic inheritance, but to the whole consciousness of this SJBA. Then from here, it will benefit many people. Then it can even bring about great transformation to the world, society, and the environment. And all these are very, very wholesome, very beautiful, very meaningful. Okay? So with this, I will end the talk.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thanks, Brother Ken Kun, for the talk this morning and to share with us or remind us the importance of Buddhist devotional practices in our spiritual cultivation. Is there any question, anything we'd like to clarify or ask Brother Ken Kun?
Oh, you have this sharing of merits and transfer of merits. Then gift of truth. Sharing of merits, transfer of merits, then service. Provision of service to the Buddhist community. Sharing and transfer are two separate merits. Service, the other last one is service to the Buddhist community. Provision of service. So, Dana, Sila, Bhavana, 3, Reverential Salutation. Reverential is T-I-A-L. T-I-A-L, yeah. Reverential Salutation. Listening to Dharma, straightening your view, sharing your merit, transfer of merit, service to the Buddhist community, then the gift of truth. So, these are the 10 things that you will do when you are here.
Yes, I have a question, Radio. First of all, I want to thank Brad Sian for putting up the summary on the on the PowerPoint. Yeah. Thank you very much, Brad Sian. Sadhu. My question is, Radio, how does chanting, Pali chanting or Buddhist chanting, helps in our devotional practices?
Thank you so much, Angbi. This is a very important question. A lot of people fail to understand the Paritta chanting or the Theravada's, what they call Pali chanting. This Paritta means protection. Actually, there are a lot of good chanting inside there. Not only for protection, but mainly in the olden days, the time of the Buddha, they call it Paritta because it can lead to a lot of protection because there were a lot of disaster during that time. So that's why there is a lot of this chanting. They invoke the power of the triple gem to protect, the Metta Sutta, the Karaniya Metta Sutta and all those things to protect. But there are also what they call the Bojanga Sutta. When you chant the factors of enlightenment, it can bring about the condition for people to recover. then all this Pali chanting, they got this power of vibration. If we chant with understanding, with a lot of sincerity, wisdom and understanding, the vibration has its power. It can purify the environment. It can purify the what they call mind of living beings, of all the whatever defilement or negativity. So it has a very good what they call vibrational type of effect on people. That's why when you feel the Pali chanting, your mind becomes more peaceful and more calm. And this is the vibration that your bodily cell needs, because it brings about a calmness, a peace, and the energy that goes in. Because vibration is energy. Okay? So this is how it actually can bring about the very strong faith and confidence in you and the calmness in you. That's how your spiritual faculty can be enhanced. And when you understand the paritta or the Pali chanting has another very powerful aspect. The Buddha always invoked the power of truth. By the power of this truth, may what and what arise or happen. Especially the Jayamangala Sutta. So the Buddha used a lot of this, even the Angulimala Sutta, for people to actually have a good delivery of the baby. Then there are also a lot of other things that the paritta chanting has. It's very unique. If you read through the whole thing, you will understand very clearly. Because during the early days, about 30 years ago, I liked to go to Brickfield. There's a library there. And I was in charge of the tape library. I was in charge of the tape library for many years. I used to record all the Dhamma talk. Then I used to help people categorize them and loan it to people. Yeah. It was during those times that I have a lot of opportunity to listen to the Dhamma, to read the Dhamma book, to develop the meditation, the cultivation, the understanding. So during that time, I have a lot of gratitude and what they call respect for Chief Reverend Kesari Dhammananda, the late chief. He is a very good monk, very kind, very, very virtuous. So because of him, I came to the Dhamma. He wrote this book, What Buddhists Believe, the first edition, red color, during 1973, I think. Somebody gave me this book. That was the turning point. When I received that book in 1973, I straight away knew, no need to search. This is it. This is what I was looking for so long. Because when I saw that book, I realized what my mother did, the traditional Buddhist style, praying to deity and all those things, is nothing to do with the Buddha's teaching. I had so much joy. Then when I saw the Four Noble Truths as written in that book, I don't know what happened. The moment I read the Four Noble Truths, I realized this is it. I told myself, whoever who can, 2,500 years ago, come out with these four beautiful noble truths to summarize all of life and existence, both the conditioned and the unconditioned, he must be the real one. Because even I myself at that time tell myself, if I had realized this truth and this enlightenment, I cannot do it that way. I cannot summarize all of my understanding into four simple but very profound, beautiful truths. He called it the Four Noble Truths. And this is the essence of his teaching. Noble means enlightened one. Noble ones are enlightened ones. Noble in every aspect of their life. Very noble in their understanding, in the way they conduct themselves, their speech, their action, their thought, their livelihood, and the way they carry themselves, they are very noble. That's why noble ones are enlightened ones. So the Buddha called this the Four Noble Truths, means the truth that can make you enlightened. If you realize the meaning, the deep meaning, the penetrative wisdom, you can become noble ones. You can become enlightened ones. So that was the reason why after that year, I actually make a determination to understand this teaching. Then, very funny, the very next year, I went into University of Malaya. Yeah. I was offered a course to do civil engineering. I was from Kedah, very Ulu state. And my whole school, I was the only one sent into civil engineering. So when I was there, I was so lucky. The first day when I was there, I stayed at First College. After dinner, one of the friends, my new classmate, I only knew him that day. He sat next to me. After dinner, he asked me, he said, "Mr. Teo, he said, you got anything to do or not tonight?" I said, "Nothing, I just came. I take you somewhere." He never tell me where. He took me to Science Faculty. Yeah. You know who I met? I met the late chief, K. Sri Ramananda. The first time I saw a monk, ball with the rope, speak very good English, and speak very good Dhamma too. So I was full of joy. That's how I started. I talked to him after the talk. I got the address. I went to Brickfield. Then everything just unfold. So this is how, when you have your good past, things will happen by itself. You don't have to do anything. You only need to make the appropriate condition for things to arise. That's why just now I said, the Buddhist devotional practice can bring forth this condition, because it will set the base for you to cultivate your meritorious action, your goodness, your wholesomeness, to transform your life, to change your life, then to bring about the condition for you to develop this spiritual faculty, so that you can understand the teaching very easily. You can assimilate everything that the Buddha taught very easily, and it comes in. But without the spiritual faculty, very difficult. I realized the faith and the confidence is very important. Because the moment I read that book, 1973, The Four Noble Truths, my faith was so strong. That was the thing that really drives me. I got no more doubt. Before that, I searched for truth. I went to all the religion, Form 5 at that time, 1971. That's why I couldn't find what I wanted. I questioned them, every aspect of it. Because when I came to know science and geography, I like to stand at night, look at the sky, all the star system, everything. Then I ask myself one question, who am I? What am I? We are just one miserable human being on this planet. Oh, now you got 6 million. That time maybe 5 billion or what? Now you got 6 billion. Then we are only one of the planets in this solar system. And our Milky Way, our galaxy, is so wide, so vast. Then this whole universe, star system, is so immense. So I just ask myself, who am I? What am I? Why are we here? During that time, Form 5, I don't know why, the mind just broke very deep. Then I just come to understand one thing. I must meditate to understand. That's how everything started. Okay? Yeah, thanks.
Okay, thank you once again, Brother Ken Kun. I think we have to stop here. We thank Brother Ken Kun for his meaningful sharing this morning. That reminds us the importance of all of us continuing to do our Buddhist devotion activities. Brother Ken Kun say at least Buddha Puja twice a day in the morning and before we go to bed, so that we can develop our spiritual faculty. And with that, we can walk the path of the Dharma, the Buddha Dharma, easier, and cultivate ourselves more successfully, spiritually, and eventually attain the cessation of suffering. We thank Brother Ken Kun, and would like to invite Brother Ken Kun to lead us in the sharing the merits that accumulated with all sentient beings.
Okay, thank you so much, Brother Jim. Okay, I will chant the Pali version. Those who can follow, you follow. Those who cannot, you just silence your mind and rejoice. Silently, you just rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We will start with sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakkhantu loka sasana Ittavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo ipmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Okay, pay respect to the Buddha mindfully with a lot of faith and confidence.
Buddhaṃ pujami. Dhammaṃ pujami. Sanghaṃ pujami.